Hi, I'm Josh, and I hope that if someday I meet John Carpenter, I can ask him to sign my VHS Halloween.
Ah, that's nice. Hey, I'm Matt, and much like one of our main characters from It's What's Inside, I too make my own shampoo, but I make mine out of self-loathing and Oil of Simpsons references.
Oh yeah, no, the good chunk of the operating RAM of my head is just references to The Simpsons. It's just like at any given point, they'd be like, "Oh, that reminds me of The Simpsons." That reminds me of The Simpsons.
People at work will catch me staring off into the middle distance. They're like, "Oh, you thinking about that big order for the afternoon?" I'm like, "Yep." And really, it's dental plan. Lisa needs braces. Dental plan. Lisa needs braces. It's like, no, we're fucked.
The one that I kept getting going back and forth to San Diego a lot of times when Kristen's family was there was that, you know, there's a naval base there, and I'd see a lot of people in sailors' outfits. And a guy would walk by, and if ever in the airport or somewhere, like a sailor person in one of those sailor outfits would look over their shoulder at someone or else, my brain would always picture the one where they're in the pier and Marge goes, "Darn it," and the sailor walks by and goes, "Language." So every fucking time. So it's just sort of one of those damn things that you can't get rid of. This is Charlie Dunn. This is Charlie Dunn Austin. Who's a good boy? That's a good boy. That's a good boy. That's a good boy.
It is. And it is also shampoo for my real friends and real poo for my sham friends and partial hot dog. First up, we have a short called Howl at the Dead or Aullar a los Muertos. And stop me if you've heard this one, but this is about a dog who is in a haunted house with his, you know, with his family. And over 8 brief minutes, we see a dog and his family, which includes a parrot and a cat, move into a house. And all of the animals can sense the creature and none of the people can. The gag of having the parrot repeat the ghost, just a chef's kiss. Never seen that before.
I thought that was so creative, but I thought they overdid it. Like, I thought it was so creative. Yeah.
I feel like that's probably the impact of doing it once is probably greater.
But yeah, like, I don't want to cool be mean idea. About it because I thought it was very creative. I mean, I'm right on the board with you, Josh. Like, I thought it was like, oh, that's dope. Like, the idea of like, because you know, if you're in the house alone and then you're doing something and you don't hear the monsters or get out of the house, and the parrot's like, "Oh, somebody's talking." And it's like, I think that's really super, super creative and awesome. I think it's really cool. I just thought it was like a little bit too much. Like, they did it too many times. I was like, but
as a survivor of a parrot household, how did that strike you?
Yeah, I was gonna say you're an unreliable narrator when it comes to birds because you have anger issues with birds. But like we had parakeets and my mom had an African gray for many years, and it's like, I can just leave them. Like, I'm glad they exist, but I just like, I'm not. It's just, it's more just sort of like, it's one of those things. Like, if you are, and I want to say this, I want to try to say this in a sensitive way. You know, people always get all like, crazy cat lady, whatever. And it's like, yeah, but if, you know, companionship comes a lot of forms. Don't be an asshole. And it's like the same thing with like a bird. It's like, if you're like a widower or a widow or something, and like you are semi-retired and you don't have, you know, whatever, and you have this animal that you like interact with and care for and does kind of stuff with, great. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't hurt me in any way. I just like being around them. They're loud. And that's the main thing, is like, I get real sound sensitive, like, just in general. And so, like, even the goddamn cat, when he's angry about the state of his cat box, come walking through, meow, 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 and I can't think. Mm-hmm. I can't. And so I am very sound sensitive. So I'm kind of like, I'm at a point in life where I'm like, birds, leave the birds. Or fry them. That's good, too. But otherwise, I'm fine with it.
They're for the birds? Ayo. For the birds.
For the boids.
I just keep one in my hand, and then it's like having two in a bush.
So I'm told.
Different. I really like this, though. Like, it is a little broad. You know, you can see that these are maybe like, you know, some amateur actors, you know, or aspiring actors. But the way that it's shot and put together is real snappy.
Very ambitious.
Yeah, it's like very,
very ambitious.
Very cinematic in the way that it's done. So I thought that was good. Like, anytime we see a short that has like movie level editing, I'm impressed.
Yeah.
I was impressed with this one. It's got some good ideas too.
Yeah, not everything works perfectly well, but I think once I kind of got the spirit of it, I was kind of came down on the hell yeah side. And it also made me realize that if this is their stealth bid for a Courage the Cowardly Dog movie, I'm here for it. Because like, that is essentially what you end up with. It's just no one believes the dog who's seeing the actual monster, and it runs around looking sad. And then, you know, at the end, it's even worse. Dun, dun, dun. Like, so
they're the only, my only take, like I said, I appreciate their, I really appreciate like how cinematic they try to make it, and the ambition of it, the creativity with the parrot gag was fucking brilliant. And so, like, yeah, I really appreciate it so much of that part of it. I, the little button on the end, I was like, just lose that. Like, mm-hmm. having the monster, having all the spirits outside of the house, it's great. Like, that part of it. Like, having the one go at the end, like, no. I love the idea that there's a bunch of spirits, but like, man, we're spirits. We get to do spirit stuff. And the dog's like, fuck you. I'm not allowing that. Because, like, for you guys have met Frankie. She's 10 and a half pounds of useless in terms of, like, defending the home. But mm-hmm. she does not think that. She thinks that she's a great protector. So I think of it, it's like the other way dogs are with, like, protecting their families. I love the idea of, like, a bunch of spirits being like, well, we never had this problem before. Huh. Yeah. But then they're having to go blarg, and they're like, that's lame. Just like, so, but besides that, like, I really appreciate their ambition and their creativity, and like, dope, like, good job, guys. Like, well, ways at the bar high. Like, that's cool.
Yeah, it was good fun.
And I was sad to see they were gonna do the dog has sacrificed himself for the family, and then I was like, oh no, the dog's not gonna go towards the light. He's gonna run toward the kid. Well, that's fantastic too. And like,
there you go.
Filmmakers can make choices I disagree with, and I can maybe still enjoy the movie, but when they do the thing that I think they should do, then that's even better. And I just, hey. I like that they found a way to duck the, that constant, like, somebody has to sacrifice themselves for other people trope, and just make the dog be the family's defender. I kind of thought they were going to just have it be ghost dog defends the family and becomes Forrest Whitaker over time. Too. But... Ghost Dog, Way of the Samurai, anyone?
There you go.
It's a cool hour and 20-minute movie that's in a two-hour movie.
Exactly. I'm just saying, I can't hear like a ghost dog without thinking of that.
True.
Or Zero. But I think this one is just almost everything I'm looking for in a short. So I think people should watch it.
Well done. And I appreciate the ambition. I think it's awesome when you can see not just like, oh, we're going to be something cool, but it's like we're really, really trying to do something. And like, I really think it's cool. Like, it comes through, you know, and it's like, yeah, well done, guys. So that's cool.
Nice.
Well done. It's a medium that's rare to find. Anyway, the.
All right.
I know. It's not voluntary. Let's jump on in if you want to VHS Halloween. I kept trying to watch 85 over the course of several days because it was the only one I hadn't seen after I saw Halloween. And like, having watched it, I can definitely say that I've watched it.
Yeah, that's about where I think I landed.
Yeah, that's about right.
There's like one that was fun, but it was cool seeing Toussaint Morrison in there. He did stuff. And what's her name from the Brave New Workshop too? The lady.
She's also trying to remember.
There are many Minnesotans in it. So that was indeed. Nice to see. But no. So, but this one, VHS Halloween or VHS Dia de los Muertos, some would say. Actually, Halloween in Spanish is Halloween.
Word.
I know that because when I lived in LA, I went to get a haircut at a Spanish barbershop, and I switched my verbs and ended up having her take off as much hair as she could instead of leaving as much hair as she could. Uh-oh. But that's neither here nor there. In the middle of the haircut, she picked
neither
up
here nor
the
hair.
Phone hey. And like had a raging argument with someone for a couple minutes and ended with Happy Halloween. But it was like,
hell yeah,
90 mile an hour Spanish, and then Happy Halloween.
Thank you for the casserole.
Yeah. Just, you tell my
words
shirt.
Are not usually said in anger. What now?
Oh, that's lovely. So VHS Halloween.
Love it.
Reception is mixed.
Yeah, I would say this will be an interesting conversation.
Yeah, I'm not sure where we all land on everything. I believe if we start with the wraparound segment, was it Charlie? Were you the one that was not into that?
Yeah.
See, I was super into the wraparound segment. Where did you land on that, Josh?
I like it. I think it's the same gag every time, and it drags a little bit, but mm-hmm. it's a good gag. And the gag is just like they've made a soda with like extract of poltergeist, and it just kind of made me think of 80s diet fads when they were like, try this, it has hydrochloric acid in it to shrink your ass cheeks, and people are like, sounds good. Yeah. Like these have it's these chips. Between you can eat the whole bag and then shit yourself inside out involuntarily. Like, and we as a society were like, cool.
Sea cucumbers are like, that's our thing.
You had
it's somewhere between giving yourself a tapeworm to lose weight and like Ghostbusters, I guess. Like, it's just ecto cooler, but there's actual ecto, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is no Pilates, only Zool.
I think without belaboring forever, I think the problem that I had with the wraparound thing is that like it was sort of, I think it could have been done in just a short, like just by itself, just beginning, middle, and end, and separating it out. Like to Josh's point, like it kind of becomes somewhat repetitive in the sense that it's just sort of like, it's like, okay. And then the other thing was just sort of like, it keeps showing the thing like for internal use only, whatever else it's like. And I kept thinking like, it's like, at some point, are we going to address why this tape exists or why they were, kind of felt like I don't like, and so I just kind of like, because of its repetition and then because of its lack of explaining why it exists, it just sort of was like, I just kind of got like, this is, it feels more like a style exercise than anything. So I did not care for that. And then of course, you know, this is where we're going to get into the big contention, because when you guys were texting about the one being the edgelordy sort of awful thing about the, who's going to do the fucked up thing, I thought you were talking about the first one.
No, because then you get to Kid Print, and I don't know this one. So the first one is called Coochie Coochie Coo for some reason, and I will put out there that the two characters that we follow around suck out loud, like they are the worst people, and I do think this would kick harder if they were better people, but we end up with like a ghost lady Halloween spirit thing that's got three sets of tits from which she secretes milk that she feeds people, and it makes them sublimely creepy baby faced people. Yeah. And that, like, all of the lore and all of the mechanism around that creature, I thought was really cool. And the baby faced people I thought were incredibly creepy. Like, it's really rare to do something with like a little bit of makeup and a little bit of special effects that really gets under my skin. And those things did. It was just like, yeah. So I could kind of get around the, it like, it definitely drags and definitely these people are insufferable. But in there is something that I had fun watching. I was kind of impressed that it was just like, you could practically smell that house. Like, that was really well put together. It was grimy.
Yeah, if you've ever worked in a coffee shop and there's that sour milk smell, if you haven't cleaned off the latte thing for a day or two, like, yeah, I can just, that whole house would have a very familiar and disgusting smell.
So for that one, Charlie, you thought it was just that kind of like try hard kind of thing?
Yeah, I just, in the most respectful way possible, fuck the people who made it, because I just like, I just, every scene had one more of like, you know what would be fucked up is if the thing smiled at the camera while the tits are making the weird milk squirt out of the thing. You'll be really fucked up if a dirty, dumpy guy in a diaper giggled and chewed on the wall. I was just like, shut the fuck up. Like, it made me so mad. I was like, I had designated time to watch it. After I got through that one, I'm like, I gotta take a break. Otherwise, none of the rest of them are gonna get a fair shake, because I'm gonna be so mad for the rest of this. I was just so angry.
I'm just wondering why that didn't trigger me, because, you know, I hate the, oh, shock me, shock me, shock me.
Yeah.
Hate the Rob Zombie grimy thing. And I think it's just, it was so novel to me that, like, it made me think, though, of Stork in VHS Beyond. Mm. I only know this because I looked them all up on Wikipedia this week. But that had the alien that was mutating people to have, like, beaks instead of mouths, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so this one, just seeing, like, that girl's got like kind of chubby cheeks. Like, what is that? And then she turns to the camera and it's like this Bratz doll of a face. Yeah. It's like, shit. Bleh. I think that just got me enough that it's like, okay, that'll get me through some of this weird shit.
Well, this is the weird thing with things like this, because I find I land hard on like, yes, this was a fun ride, or
you land what? This was a fun ride.
Thank you. Or, you know what I mean? But because I think the issue is like, weird edgelord over the top, won't this be shocking, fully describes The Hills Have Eyes, right? But like, I love that movie, and then this kind of can go the same way. I think I find, or at least for myself, I'm having a harder time acknowledging like, yes, this is meant to be like shitty Friday the 13th kids and crazy shit's happening, not because we're trying to be so cool, but because we think it's really fun to do crazy shit. And I think the big problem I have is if the film looks nice, I don't buy it as being a thing that was made up by the seat of someone's pants as easily. Where like when something's shot in 16 and it's overexposed in half the scenes and the audio drops out for part of the whatever, I'm always like, yeah, but this is like run and gun, whatever, low budget horror. But when something, it looks put together nicely, then I always think, oh, well then they had all the money in the world, it looks like, you know, like they could have done anything and they chose to do this. And it's like, well,
even
maybe
though
they
very
just,
much now, yeah, that
it's
could
even
be
cheaper probably.
Bucks, yeah.
Yeah. You know, so it's like, I think that's always part of it, where I'm trying to teach myself, like, take a second and decide if this looked like it was made in the 70s, would this be kind of charmingly over the top? And I think this would for me. Like, not all of it works, but like the intro where we're just watching them be shits sucks. Once they're scared and kind of depending on each other, you see that they're human and I kind of like them. I just wish they'd made me like them ahead of time, because now it's too late, you know? Yeah. But yeah, the overall weirdness, I was kind of there for it. So like, I ended up liking this, but I could see this going either way pretty easily.
Right. Yeah, and I don't know. I hate to be such a pee in the campfire, but I just like, I don't know what it was that just got me with this. It's just like every single time something popped up or there's one more thing and just one more whatever, and I was just like, it's like, it's just got more and more angry, and I just sort of was like, it's like, you're not going to shock me, so stop trying. Mm-hmm. It was just sort of like, I just like it, because I mean, ultimately, and this is, you know, full disclosure, every time I do a VHS one, this comes up, because like, you know, with a few exceptions, you know, like the Wreck movies and Inflicted and things like that, where I really do like the found footage kind of style, by and large, I just kind of always go like, something will be better if you don't do it this way. And so in this one, I just kept thinking like, how much cooler would it have been? I'm thinking about like the first Conjuring movie, where James Wan talks about how they built the model of the house and played around with light to figure out like how you could keep things in camera and then like reveal them while you're still looking at it, versus like flashing, cutting, zooming things, and like you could just keep things in camera. Like the best is that the fucking thing on top of the bureau, and it's sort of like it's there the whole time, and it's just like the camera goes up and moves in and out, and then as you deal with the light, you go, oh damn. And it's like, and that's just craftsman like and great. And I just think like with something like this, like maybe I would have just dealt with it better had it been presented a different format. And then on top of that, like I recognize you don't have a movie, but like, you know, the thing, like, you know, it's a dark house, the things blacked out doorway, hand sticks out a basket and goes, yoo-hoo! And it's like, no, we're, why? Oh, it's like a haunted house thing. Like, no, unless you verify that, don't go, what's wrong with you? Like, it's just like for fuck's sake. So I don't know. It's just one of those things, like, yeah, this one was just sort of like just inspired the rage. I just was not happy with this at all. But you know,
but then
user error, I guess.
So even though I was enjoying that one, though, when we got to the next one, which is called Ad Apresec Infra,
which I called in my notes, by the way, I called Telefono Negro.
Yeah. But this, I was relieved to see that they're like, yes, it's called VHS, but that doesn't mean that you actually have to have VHS artifacts on your whole goddamn movie all the goddamn time. And having one or two of those per VHS works. Because once we hit this, we have like some cell phone cameras, like a couple of handheld cameras. The cell phone is filmed in vertical and horizontal every now and then. I really loved one of the kids going like, dude, why are you filming horizontal. Like, what's that about? Like, because my fucking eyes are horizontal, asshole. But anyway, I have feelings.
Indeed.
I love that this one tells that parallel story of these people going to the, you know, freaky house and the whole world going all fucky. And the story of, like, going back there with the police.
And yeah, it's like the commode story in Reservoir Dogs.
Go all fucky again. Yeah, like, it's great because it, in a found footage thing like this, they usually stick with a single go-through. And I was kind of happy to just have it be more cinematic and just push that boundary a little bit to give me a better experience.
Yeah, I thought this one was, and no surprise, I guess, but this is Paco Plaza. This is the guy who did Wreck and Veronica, and I guess that's him. So, like, you know, it's sort of like, you know, I guess it's no surprise to, like, the few found footage things I like or ones that he's made. So I guess it kind of checks out. But yeah, this one, and I don't know about you guys, I rewound back at a certain point. I'm like, how did they do that thing? Like, when they floated up to the ceiling and then, like, they flopped it around and then the guy walks in, and you're like, well, how, what? And I rewound back, like, what? How did they do that exactly? Like, dang. So I thought this was, it was simple enough in a setup that, like, you know, we don't have to get super complex, but it was intriguing and mysterious enough to where you're like, what is this thing and what's causing the thing? And, like, oh man. And this is absolutely something that could just, like, this is 10,000% it could be a feature. And this is like, because it just, it's so interesting and mysterious. And it's like, I love this one. I thought this was awesome.
Yeah, the very setup of being forced to walk through and recreate a crime scene, which we kind of saw done in Hills Have Eyes, or not Hills Have Eyes, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre thing when Arlie Ermey does it. Mm-hmm. Instant tension, making someone relive a horrifying event in the scene of the thing. And to me, that's like such a smart cheat code for getting at least, you know, 6 minutes of the old Matt Alley pucker out of me. Because, like, as soon as someone goes, no, show me where you were when this person's head exploded. Yeah.
It's like, well, all the things that you did when the world went insane. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Say it verbatim. I want to get this right.
So the,
and they do play it lightly for comedy, I think, by doing that. Like, there are moments they call out like that. This is fantastic. Yeah, I love this.
Yeah, just that little denouement when they flip everything and everyone goes up to the ceiling and then guy walks in and just scoops the eyeballs out of people's heads. Like, that is just gross in the best possible way.
That's pretty gnarly.
Yeah, I just, yeah, I really dug this one. And on top of that, you know, not about to be the mia kind of person, but even the setup of, like, getting them into the space, like, absolutely makes sense. Like, younger people looking for a place to go hang out, do whatever, like, totally makes sense. Like, it's like, perfect. Just, like, simple, easy, like, tabe sloppy, works perfectly.
And should, like, we go in here? No. Are we going to go in here? Yes.
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 Perfect. And then after that is Fun Size, which is possibly my favorite of them, even though, you know, Out Upper Sick Infra is great. Fun Size is just deranged.
Yeah, that's what I love. Okay, that's the perfect, I've been looking for the right word for days now, Josh. So, like, deranged is a perfect word for it, because it's just like, it's just this side of just, it's fucking nuts.
It's a Looney Tunes cartoon. It's fantastic. Yeah,
like, it's if Judge Doom from Who Framed Roger Rabbit made a cartoon.
I guess that just is itchy and scratchy. But
right. That would be. But it definitely runs on cartoon logic.
Oh, it's so good.
Just
the closest I could think of was it just called Gnomes, that short film with gnomes, like, squishing people up, and then it was helping grow new mushrooms that would lead people off.
Oh, I love that one.
Fantastic. But, like, this has that same kind of reckless glee that is just so much fun.
What I love is that you have these, like, archetypes of this group of people, and then you have the whole thing with, like, the people getting the one couple getting engaged and this, that, whatever, and then once they get kind of pulled through the candy bucket, which is just, like, in and of itself is just, like, fucking phenomenal, and then it just becomes, yeah, it's like Nightmare on Elm Street sort of level of just, like, what the ever loving shit is happening, and it's sort of like, oh, if we just find the key for this, this will get it for this, or this will be for this, and, oh, the rules will dictate that such and such will happen, like no. And it's just, yeah, it's just gleefully just, yeah, deranged is a perfect word for it. And it's just like, so I really admire they're just, like, go for broke, just sort of like, what the shit is happening with this? Like, there's no lore, there's no mythology. It's just like, okay.
Well, then we have two people, right, who are shooting a movie or like some like influencer content or some shit. Yeah. So we have some decent cameras and we get to just, they never really figure out what's going on. And yeah. Neither do we, and why any of this exists. And I'm so here for that. Just like, yep. We encountered something that we just, science cannot explain. And it wasn't like a new species of dolphin this time. It was crazy candy dimension where they want to chop you up and make your balls into candy.
Yeah, no, I just like, yeah, just a bonkers thing with a lot of energy, like good energy. Didn't have like little sluggish bits. You just sort of one more Looney Tunes thing that just gets added to it. Then when they get the fucking key, open the door, and it's just as one per person. You're like, oh my god. it's absolutely just picture. Yeah, it's rabbit season, duck season. Like that's the level that it is. Like I did sort of feel slightly bad for that kid because he did ask like, would it be okay if I take two? And then sort of like, okay,
well. Don't even like, ask, buddy.
Yeah, you should just follow the thing. So then we get to Kid Print, which, you know, like I mean, Matt and I have talked about this, and Matt and Josh, thankfully, you've not, you know, necessarily is just depraved. Like, you know, I've seen, you know, a handful of the American guinea pig and Japanese guinea pig ones. I know Matt, I know you've seen a couple of them. And you know, nothing beats being a small screening theater in a place you can't escape, watching, you know, Japanese guinea pig, was that a 3 or 2, whichever one that was. And it's just sort of like, and I can't escape this, and I have to just sort of sit and watch it. And so like, there's parts of it that reminds me of that a little bit. Like there's a little bit of that kind of feel to it, you know, like where it's just the peeling of the skin and this thing and that thing, whatever else.
It's also not very well done. Like, well, go ahead, yeah.
But that's so the biggest, my biggest thing is the thing that I'm sure you guys both get quite tired of me bringing up, which is that like in the realm of reality, there's nothing in this that's supernatural. It's just a child murderer guy. And mm-hmm. So like there's just nothing, like I said, there's nothing that's supernatural about it. And so like, because it's supposed to be set in the realm of reality, like that amount of children that have gone missing and that amount of thing that's become a thing, like, I'm terribly sorry, but there's just not going to be steady stream of children wandering down to this TV studio, and then they disappear, and then you don't just go, I wonder if we should case that place a little bit, or maybe do a little bit of, you know, investigative work or forensic work or fucking anything. And it's just sort of like, and so that was my biggest problem with this whole thing that just pissed me off was that. It was just sort of like, it was just like, this doesn't make any sense. You've not programmed into your short how this carries on, you know, like it's just sort of like, you know, like Bundy lasted as long as he lasted because he went over a good chunk of the United States and did this thing, that thing, whatever else. And like, you think about different serial killers, different things that went on, whatever else, BTK and Gacy and the rest of these guys. And like, there's a way, you know, forensically that you can examine the length of time that they existed and why that worked. And in this one, they just go, we don't give a shit about that part. We're just going to just kind of pretend that this is going to function this way. Nobody's ever going to see this guy carrying body parts out of this building or burning clothing or any fucking thing. Like, come on, man.
Well, I think this segment does a really accurate job of portraying what people's fear of something like this is. Like,
yes, yeah, oh, yeah,
this
absolutely
is like the cartoonish boogeyman that like 80s media was telling my parents. Is like, this is what happens. Some weirdo down the street. Isn't it odd that this grown man has a job doing something that involves children? Like, that's why you got to teach your kids a secret word so someone has to come pick them up if your parents don't know it. You know, it's not that, and it's like, this just is not a thing. Like, and so, you know.
It's the Bitterbinder approach.
Yeah, you know, just like, this is just, so it's like, yeah, that's, and if that's going to be, if like doing a thing that taps into a like society craze level fear, like they did a great job of making it be the, this is what that boogeyman would look like, you know, assuming all those things were possible. And as you pointed out, Charlie, they're actually implausible in the real world. But like, to say what I needed this to do something with that, it's like, great, you've nailed it. Now, are you going to give us a lesson, like, you know, a fairy tale lesson at the end of this, or some kind of like moralizing of, see, we should do this, or I think this is how you actually protect kids, or it's whatever, or are you going to spoof it and give us a steam valve at the end? And it just kind of stopped. And I guess it's supposed to be just chilling, like, oh, he's still out there. But again, it's like, and maybe we are specifically of the correct generation to have been burnt out by the satanic panic and stranger danger, that's just not.
But to
we
me,
we had just, to go so far to deprogram that's not a threat anymore. I don't know.
But to me, it just felt like the ideation session stopped with, okay, how can we do just like torture porn, but with kids?
Yeah.
Because
maybe.
Dude, people get so unnerved during like a Saw movie, and nobody likes to see children in jeopardy. So like, it's fucking cheat code, bro. If we do fucking torture porn with kids, it'll be the most disturbing thing anybody's ever seen. It'll be totally fucked up, bro. And then they made this dumbass thing, and it just like, it bugged me. Cause like, I resent the implication that you have a story when all you have is a cheap emotional hook.
Yeah. And I'm absolutely 10,000% on board with you with that, Josh. Cause like the thing where something like Caravan works really well, the Australian short, is that like you just get the shot, the implication, the suggestion, the idea, and just that cranks that fear, that nerve, and it works beautifully. And like with this one, you get a few of those shots of these children being scared, and that was I felt that was very upsetting. Like I got a little with one little boy, like who looked like he was like 7 or 8 or so. Like that was pretty upset. I kind of got a little upset, like watching that, because it just I know he's an actor, I know it's a movie, but it's just like it was just kind of upsetting. But then it was like they abandoned that like raw nerve of really tapping into that thing, and then they just go into guinea pig territory, and it's just like okay, whatever. And then when they do the coda of the fucking news footage, it reminded me of that sketch that when Kate McKinnon and Andy Bryant were in the cast of SNL, where it's like the high school kids doing like the message play, and they're like, oh, I've got AIDS. Oh wow, we can't hang out with him. What? Like that. Like it had that level of writing to it, and it was just sort of like, and they had no leads nowhere else. And I'm like, okay, so there's no forensic evidence in the building. They didn't comb the thing. They didn't to the guy who's an employee there when there's 20 children that have gotten killed in the last 2 years, whatever else. Like they didn't just comb every inch of that fucker's life for 6 months. Like fuck off. Like it's just sort of like just take your stupid childlike writing and go to hell. Like that. Like that was where I got mad. So
for part
I definitely
one,
get that you guys were upsetting. Like I get it. I totally get it. But that was it. Was just kind of for a different thing. Like it's just like argh.
And like you can show me just the most fucked up thing you can think of, and not trigger that response if you're like Martyrs, say.
Yeah.
Because that had something to say, that had a story with characters that I was interested in. It was structured like a narrative, and like this just didn't have any of that. It just seemed like it started and stopped with like, yeah, we'll just do a whole bunch of like child torture scenes, because of course we could do that. And like, and the other thing is they weren't even particularly well done. It took me a while to get like, wait, is he actually peeling the kid's face off? Because he's clearly just got a face. I understand how movies work, but you got to give me something. Like when the effects are so bad you can't even tell what they're supposed to be, like that's some shit. So yeah, that one did nothing for me at all. And also, given that this runs a tad long, I feel like I would have been happy to lose that one. It's like the lake one from the first one, just get rid of it, it's fine, you know. Yeah. We can have 4 good shorts and wrap around. It's good. But anyway, the last one is Home Haunt. And it is just a dude who makes a home like Halloween maze thing and then finds a record at an antique store. And the record starts bringing the whole thing to life. And everybody dies just this once.
Hell yeah.
And like this takes a good damn sight to get going. But once it goes, it's really great. And it caught that energy of like the haunted house one in the first VHS or Siren.
Yeah.
In the first one, right down to that, like there's a POV shot at the end where a witch grabs the kid holding the camera impales them on the broom and flies them up into the air, and then like camera falls to the ground. I'm like, that's fucking awesome.
Pretty great. Yeah.
Yeah. And it,
yeah, that definitely, I'm glad you mentioned that, Joshua, because that was exactly what I thought of when you go up in the air. You're like, oh, dude, it's like Siren. It's like, that's cool. Like, and I like that they kind of like tapped into that thing of being like how some people's, without getting lectury, it was just sort of like, sometimes a parent's passion or interest, kind of laps the kid and sort of like, yeah, how like that's a weird dynamic. And so like, and they played into that without getting super heavy handed about it necessarily, but it was like, then once it kind of goes, like, oh dude, this is fun.
This definitely recalled me complaining about having to help put up Christmas lights on the house as a teenager and going like, oh yeah, there was a point where I just was like, this isn't worth the effort anymore. Like, I feel that kid. My only other thing, I absolutely love this too. My only other thing that I was preoccupied with was my brain trying to stunt cast the dad with Dana Gould.
Yeah, I did. Oh, I actually did
remind me of that
too.
Story. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just like, oh God, that'd be fun too. Not that like this guy's great, everything's fine. I'm just like, in my head, that's the same guy. This is just the alternate reality version.
And I liked his wife too. She was a damn good sport.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, well, that's why I kind of felt this came across very sincerely. Was it just kind of like it felt like it was tapping into or speaking to that idea, and like in a way that I thought was, it came across as being sincere. Oh, by the way, I totally realized we didn't even talk about with the dog Bark of the Dead one, that short. That's the guy who did Dance of the Dead.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, that's him. The same guy. Greg, is it Greg Bishop? Is that his name?
The filmmaker?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I'll be damned.
Yeah, so I wrote that down. I'm looking at my notes right now, and then I realized we didn't say that when we're talking about it. Like, I'm doofus. And I will, of course, this is not going to shock you. This won't just shock you at all, but I'm looking at my notes and I said, fifth segment, Dr. Mortis, fun, ridiculous thing, would love to have had, love it as a feature, and then in all capital letters, not in first person. Okay. Because again, it has that glee and has that joy and has that energy, but it's like, how much cooler is it if we get a reaction shot and then it cuts to the mouth of the opening, like, and then the hands kind of moving, like, how fucking great is that? So I was like, ah, man. So, hats off to them for like having a good energy and a good fun feel to the thing. That was a good kind of thing. But then, of course, then we get the goddamn wraparound at the end, which is just no fucking point. I just wrote my notes, just so fucking dumb, no fucking point.
Oh, but I liked all the last of it where they've got three people in there and they're like, here's three different formulations, we're going to try them all at once, this is a terrible idea, let's do it. And they have like the little vacuum that sucks out the poltergeist, but it didn't work. And then the one girl is possessed but not dead, so they're go ahead and ship it.
It felt very Welcome to Night Vale.
Yeah, okay, yeah, okay.
For the people who are still alive.
All right.
So ultimately, on my end of it, I had at least something to like in all of them except Kid Print. Coochie Coochie Coo, probably the second weakest, and then like the rest of them I had big fun with, no complaints. So for me, this is in the a 7 out of 10 range, it's probably in the top 3 or 4 of these guys. There's like 8 of them. Yeah,
I'm right there with you, actually. 7 out of 10. I mean, an anthology is basically always a mixed bag, so anything over 50% is pretty good for an anthology. And like, yeah, Kid Print being the big stinker for me, and the couple other bits that weren't as good, but the good here is real good for me, and it's by far the most fun overall experience I've had watching a VHS movie in quite a while. So yeah, I like this one.
Yeah, I'm just going to be the sourpuss. Like,
I just love the defeated sigh. Like, it's okay.
I know.
I didn't like the wailing.
Yeah, you did that wrong.
Exactly. So go, fly and be free.
Yeah, I really love Paco Plaza's short of this one. I thought that was fantastic. Fun size, which is sort of like just nonsensically silly and just like just super enjoyable. Like, this is the fucking thing with the candy bar head dumping out the gobstoppers and the girl slipping on the ground and going yoo-hoo and running off out of the background. Like, just fucking ridiculous. So yeah, so I like that one. I love Paco Plaza's one. And then, like I said, Kid Print, I didn't have as much anger towards that as y'all did. And then I really fucking hated the first one. And then the wraparound, I just sort of was like, you know, because I mean, part of the thing, like, it's the wraparound thing, just to put a button on this really fast, is that, like, the thing, like, yeah, mixed results, obviously, to different VHSs, but I go back to, like, the first one, which was grating and annoying at times with the wraparound. There's these fucking, you know, dirt bags and all this kind of stuff, but there was like a point where it was like they're fighting the tapes and this is what's was coming from. Like, there was like a point to it as it relates to the bigger structure, and I can't for life of me figure out how the Phantasma one worked in there. And then I just kind of come to the idea that, like, that should have just been its own short and then come up with a wraparound that has a goddamn point is the thing. So, like, I did not have a whole lot of fun with this outside of Paco Plaza's and the fun size one. So I'm going to go like 4.5, like 4.5 out of 10, 4.5 out of 10. Rick Baker says that looks like shit. Which I don't know if you guys were surprised. I had thought he passed away. I thought he had passed away. And I was like, oh, that's Rick Baker. Like, oh, damn. Like, hey, good for you for being alive.
Yeah. I do enjoy when a person is alive.
Indeed. Yes, it's depending much better on the than person. Alternative. Yeah, I guess it depends on the person.
Yeah. Oh, you know, VHS filmmakers, you can hear the sound of my voice, I'm sure. You don't have to have a wraparound.
Also true.
You don't. There have been a couple that haven't, and they are probably better for it.
Or just get a notepad and a pen and just sit down and watch Southbound. And, like, you can see how this can be done correctly with no thing where you can bleed one into the next one and you can do it really goddamn well. Just go talk to Roxanne Benjamin. She knows what the fuck's up. She's like, she produced the living shit out of Southbound. Southbound's amazing. So, yeah, just go watch that and see how to do it.
But make sure you put on a big prosthetic nose first.
That's true.
And then don't put on the red light. Are there any other Roxannes? Am I missing one?
Chris and I rewatched it a couple months ago.
Roxanne?
I'd forgotten the scene in the bar is just fucking all-timer. It's amazing to watch. It's the writing of it is so fucking brilliant. And it's just like, oh, so good. A lot of the rest that kind of clunks more than I remember, but, like, there's certain sequences that are just fantastic.
Yeah. Well, we'll take a little break and then we'll be back with our other two flicks.
Yes, sir.
So next up we have Good Boy, or El Hijo Bueno, or El Perro Bueno, really, but it's not Good Dog. This is a movie about a dog who is in a haunted house with its owner, and we stay pretty locked down to the level of the dog, if not his particular point of view. Like, we're never
they shoot
in a
from three scene. Different angles.
Yeah, we're never in a scene where the dog is not there. So, like, it's only things that the dog witnessed are in the movie. And ultimately, like, in the behind the scenes afterwards, which are adorable, we find out that this is just a guy and his dog that he's raised from a puppy, who is an untrained animal. And so they spent 3 years making this movie with him. And, like, that is why it makes it hard for me to not really have enjoyed this all that much, because I think that's great. And I want more of that guy and that dog in everyone's lives and in the soul of our nation. But as a movie, those choices are kind of limiting.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, they, you know, I mean, I'm the same boat as you, Josh. Like, I really admire this guy. I really admire the kind of the pluck and the focus and just, like, the work, and, like, I really sincerely admire all of that, and I think it's really, really cool. And it's like, but it is kind of a bummer, because, like, my biggest gripe with this ultimately was, like, I kind of came out of it going, like, there's really, like, a whole bunch of plot and a whole bunch of something that's just not there. Like, it's like, it is a story and it goes from middle end, but, like, there's just not a lot of meat on the bones at all, and so it feels very slight. And that's a bummer, because it's like, I don't think that they approach this as a slight thing. It just, the result ends up being not as weighty as I would like it to be.
Because you have 3 or 4 moments of, like, crisis or action or scary throughout. And you only have so many levers to pull to get between those moments. So, like, one time they take the owner gets sick, and so they go to the doctor, and he gets to bring the dog because that's how movies work, you know. But that's fun. But then the rest of it, like in between those moments of like kind of white knuckling it, you have the dog stares at something. The dog kind of walks over and looks at something and cocks its head a little bit. And like, that's not enough to hang a movie on. There are only so many gags that they can pull, and they just keep doing them. And it just makes me go, this would be like a 30 minute or a 45 minute or a 20 minute would work for this. And it's an 85 and it still feels a little padded out. And I think it just is that there's not that much more you can do. You know?
Yeah.
I take no joy. Like, I really like this dog and this man. And there are parts of this that work really well. I love that there is a ghost dog, you know, who is not Forrest Whitaker again. But the first couple of scenes where that dog shows up, it's like, oh shit, that's Bandit. Oh man, like, I've never thought of that idea of like, my owner is haunting this house, and so I am also haunting the house. Like, shit, that is a really cool idea. But also from the dog's perspective, you can't tell very much story. And so you end up going, okay, but what was Granddad's deal with the cabin? And what was, there was some kind of curse, and I guess, but like, I don't know, things just kind of get weird for the dog for a while. And he has the times where we're not sure if he's awake or hallucinating. And I don't know, it just, none of the story bits gelled, but the dog bits were good. I like a dog. You know, I'm a dog person, much to my eternal suffering with three morons living in my house. But I really like dogs. It was fun to watch a dog do stuff, you know, at the base level. But at a movie level, like, I wonder if, like, so did we all see this in the theater?
Yes.
I wonder if that was part of it, that it felt like if I was sitting watching that on Shudder, I might have been kinder to it.
See, I feel like it would be the opposite, because I loved this. Like, this is super fun. But also, I like Skinamarink. So, you know, so that, you know, calibrate accordingly. But because to me,
compared to Skinamarink, this is War and fucking Peace as far as story goes. But yeah,
sure. Continue. But like, the, you know, the just kind of lingering and being sort of stuck in this atmosphere of kind of dread and confusion, and having, you know, in addition to our like limited perspective because of the dog and its understanding of things, like, you also have limited abilities, you know, lack of thumbs and such. I decided at some point watching the movie that every time the dog is just like barking a whole bunch at something, what he's actually saying is thumbs. It's always fucking thumbs. But so to me, that's kind of makes how the story is sort of just skipping rocks across the movie, with like a little bit of information from guy's phone call with sister, or then guy's checkup, and then, you know, guy's more angry phone call with sister is like, okay, so he's in a bad place in his life, and he went to a bad place, kind of, you know, one of those houses that has the grudge in it. And okay, I kind of have the shape of it, and like, I don't necessarily understand it all that well, but neither does the dog. The dog's just kind of seeing what the dog sees, and that's just like, this dude sucks and is a bummer all the time now, and every now and then there's something else going on here that I'm aware he should be scared of, but, you know, I'm stuck with this guy. And like, that's enough kind of weird little conflicts happening that kept me entertained with something I thought was really moody. But I think that is improved with big, huge, giant room, big, huge, giant sound. I think cozy living room on my comfy couch with my quilt, I'm not going to get as lost in those much more subtle bits of the movie that are part of what I think made it work so well for me. So I don't know, like, you know, your mileage may vary, but I think this worked better because of the theater experience.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I wanted it to be like closer to the scope of its ambition. To me, would be on a streamer, and in that like smaller setting, without the expectation of like, I'm going to movie film for theaters. Because Jesus God, if I had seen Skinamarink in a theater, I would have cut a bitch. If I had left my house and spent $10 on popcorn, even on like the A-list, If somebody had had the unmitigated gall to serve that to me as a theatrical experience, I would have kicked him in the fucking nuts. So
I want to know where you're getting $10 popcorn.
From the concession stand.
There's no way it's that cheap.
Well, you know, when you're a member of the A-list, they,
Jesus Christ.
They hook you up.
La-di-da.
I
know letters.
I can only eat a medium popcorn without making myself physically uncomfortable, but on the A-list, the large cost is the same as medium.
So it's wasting money not to get it.
So I get the large, and then I don't want to waste it and not eat it all, and then I eat it all, and then I feel like shit for a day. But that's neither here nor there. It's just, I don't want to be that guy, but I'm going to. The short that we watched did this concept the way that I had imagined that concept would be done. And I think you could pull that out to a feature length, and it's more of just, it's Poltergeist, right? But
yeah,
you've got these animals who can see things, but they can't really communicate with the humans or each other. And like, I could see it. I love the idea of the cat just not giving a fuck.
Like, I know that's my favorite part about it. The cat's just like, I don't give a shit. It's
like, I must defend the family. And the cat's like, why? Like, what have they done for me lately? They just fed you 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, that's not now. Yeah. What's wrong with you?
So, yeah, it brings me no joy to not have enjoyed this as I wanted to, but it says something when you're 85 minutes and you got me checking my watch most of the time. So, what is the Roger Ebert was like on the first page of my notes for this movie? I wrote long. On the second, I wrote endless. On the third, I wrote 1 gallon of milk, 1 loaf of bread. I forget the movie, but yeah, that's where I kind of ended up with this. So I would give like the dog and the guy a solid 8 out of 10 and this movie a like 5.5 out of 10. Man's best friends.
So we're averaging that to
6.
That'll do.
Math checks out.
Oh, sure. As far as I can tell. Say it with authority. If it's a number, I'll believe you. I liked this the most out of everyone on the show this week. I think this certainly gets some points for novelty. That's a big swing to do something like this. Like, I think does a pretty fair job of keeping things from the dog's perspective. You get POV, you get over the shoulder, like, you know, Fallout video game level following the dog, and you get full narrative shots. So like you get whatever perspective I think is most suited to keeping you inside that perspective, that character of that dog. I thought that was a smart way to do it. And like little things like that just kind of kept my interest, seeing how they'd show me what they wanted me to think was important. So I had a great time watching this unfold. I'd say like 8.5 out of 10. This family's a lot more ambitious in their free time than I will ever be.
Yeah, I just, you know, I think we've kind of touched on the idea that, you know, ultimately when somebody, you know, is this committed to what they're doing, and it's really cool. And you know, there's parts of this, like when you're following the dog, like kind of trotting through the house to go check on a thing, like I found that like just genuinely unnerving and like very like tense and just hats off. Like that's really, really dope. And like, and just to, yeah, just super on board with that part of it. I just really think above everything else that this needed just a lot more plot, where like just like something more about the entity, or something more about the like the descent with the grandfather, or just anything in that realm that would have just added more meat to it. Because as it does play a lot more slight. Even though, like I said, there are some bits that really, really work just incredibly impressively well, and really were very nervy. I just need a lot more story and plot. So I think I'll be like slightly higher than Josh on this. I think I'll just because like there's enough parts that did work that I think I'll say like 6.5. I think 6.5 out of 10. Get busy living, or get busy licking your butt, out of 10.
Yes.
I don't care who you are, how you spend your weekends. So finally, let's talk about It's What's Inside, or Es Lo Que Está Dentro. I feel like this is a minor miracle of a movie for several reasons. So first off, we have 8 main characters, and that is too many characters. And second, it's a body swapping movie. So we have 8 souls and 8 bodies that can be combined in different ways throughout the source of the film. Third, we have almost all of these characters are deeply unlikable. Because we have like guy who talks in black slang, like white guy who talks in bro, like black slang kind of thing. We got the like couple who is actively breaking up because the in girl's slow kind motion. Of unpleasant. Yeah, and the guy's just a complete piece of shit. And in that frustrating kind of like, well, I don't know why you're so mad that I don't have sex with you and I masturbate all the time. Right? Have you thought about like how that makes me feel that you're mad at me? Like that shitty guy, right?
Yeah.
You've got like a tech bro and an influencer, and it's like they're not even trying to make you like these people, right? So you put all of those things together and it seems like this is just going to be a pain in the ass to watch, but actually it's just supercharged and crackles with energy. And I never once was confused about who was in what body unless the movie wanted me to be for a second.
That was, yes. Thank you for saying
and
that.
The fact exactly that right. they pulled that off, the tools that they use, like little lighting cues. It's and astonishing. Stuff.
Yeah. This is full of bisexual lighting yeah. and it's used to great effect.
But yeah. They do it. They lighting. Do the thing where whenever they show the soul of the person who's speaking,
it's that in, like, actor red
is
hues.
In red light. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they can do the scene twice and then cut back and forth just to remind you, but it never feels like, hey, remember, dummy, this is Forbes in her body.
No, it's always like, when I oh, wanted to be yeah. like lean in and be certain I knew what was happening, they would give me a little, hey bud, got you. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is great. Like, it's as though I'm telling it when to give me a reminder.
Well, I tell you the other thing with Josh, you touched on this, but one of the things that stands out to me watching this again was that, like, you're like, yeah, they're not the most likable bunch in the world in that regard. But what I do like is that I think at certain points as this goes along, you get glimmers of like what somebody is like when the light's not on.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Sort of like the Alicia Denham Clark, like I'm super biased because like she plays Alicia in Fear the Walking Dead, and she's fucking phenomenal in Fear the Walking Dead. She's so goddamn good. And so, like, I just watch and see her pop up. I'm like, oh, yeah, she's going to be good. Like,
which one is
obviously.
She?
She's the one who's, like, the Instagram kind of influencer.
Yeah,
lady.
Nikki. Yeah.
Yeah, Nick, yeah. That's, and so, and she's just, she's phenomenal in Fear the Walking Dead. She's so good. And she, so, just like, when I see her pop up, I'm like, oh, yeah, she's going to be great. You know, it's going to be awesome. But, like, everybody, even, like, the guy with, you know, the guy, the kind of street talking guy, whatever else, he has that moment where he attempts to apologize. And, like, that could have been played, like, you know, kind of like, oh, fact joke. Or it could have been played, whatever, but it, like he's genuinely attempting to get a thing across. It's yeah. like, and it's like, and so there's moments like that. There's moments where you like Forbes character or the, you know, the character, that character where he like, you can just kind of tell that there's this like rumbling level of just sad to him. That's like not bitter, not revenge, not whatever. It's like, it's just, there's a level of yearning for acceptance thing that like never becomes a monologue or a speech. It's like, you just feel it. And then the couple, the breaking up-y couple, whatever else, like that one is just fucking painful to watch. You're mm-hmm. just like, you're like,
it's all very unpleasant, but by due of that, it's also very relatable.
That's like, a, yeah. That's
I what have both it's funny watched you read my friends do that, and I have done that and not been able to recognize it till I was outside of it. Yeah.
Well, like, you absolutely read my mind. Where like that was by the third act of this. That's one of the things that I came to was that like what, you know, all these different people as I'm watching the werewolves and these little human moments that they allow them to have in there, and like it does feel super relatable, but not in a cutesy sort of like, you know, Hallmarky kind of way. Like it just becomes this thing you go like, oh yeah, I know that
well,
thing.
It doesn't fall into thing. The nostalgia trap as easily because you're recalling like the negative part of that age.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, oh, it's a good reference because I know exactly what you mean, but without having all the like gumdrops and lollipops around it that you're trying to make me go, yeah, see, I like you because I like He-Man. take that out of it. And it's like, oh yeah, I got fucked like that once too. Like, that's a vengeful nostalgia.
I'm trying to think how many movies we get that are at that particular time of life. Cause like these guys are 8 years out of college.
So like 28?
Yeah, 30? Like edging up on 30, if not right there. And at that, one of the first, like, sitting down and going, okay, what have I accomplished and what am I going to accomplish?
In your high school reunion age, yeah.
Yeah, so like, what am I...
Yeah, that's, what exactly that's about as far out as 18-year-old you can think is about 30. And so if you haven't done everything you ever thought you would, now, well, you're going to die tomorrow, so it's too late. You're 30.
So these are people that were friends in college, and college was not that long ago, really. And it's not the, like, the 40-year-olds coming back together and they all have kids and they're all trying to figure out what their lives are in that, like, second crisis phase, right? This is the first crisis phase. Like, a couple of them are super successful. A couple of them are maybe on the way to something, and a couple of them are just stuck. And so that's interesting. Well, I don't think I've seen that on stage.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, like, nobody's living in a dumpster.
Well, and that's another reason. I'm glad you highlighted that, Joshua, because that's another reason why this thing works, is that, like, you don't necessarily get the thing that you expect. It comes into play, but you don't get the one person is phenomenally successful and there's like a resentment about that, or there's like a somebody's embarrassed because they have a roommate or some nonsense. Like, you don't get that kind of crap. Those are pitfalls they just don't have time for. But then you also don't get the other side of it, where, like, Alicia, which is Nikki, like, she's got this very kind of vapid existence, whatever else, but, like, depends on how you measure success. Like, I find most of that stuff pretty fucking worthless, but at the same time, like, you know, like, whatever, what's your measure of success, and, like, what are the pitfalls of that? And, like, clearly she has those pitfalls, you know, obviously. And so it's sort of like, but then our girl with the breakup couple, when the switcheroo happens where she's in there, and then, like, they're trying to figure out what's going on, but to figure out what to do, it's like, that taps into breaking up girls thing, where it comes down to, like, a level of taught or ground in inadequacy. And so she's like, this will solve, not to be a wise ass here, but, like, this will solve my problem. The thing that will solve my problem is this body, this image, this whatever. And it's sort of like, and then this violent clinging to that thing. And it's sort of like, and that's just, like, it's just tragic, because it's just sort of like, I don't want to speak for y'all, but, like, everybody at some point or other, myself included, you will do that at some point. You get some, whatever it is, like, you know, you're out in public, you're someplace, whatever, somebody you know, somebody you acquaintance, some whatever. So at some point or other, you'll be like that will be the thing. That would be just boom, and then the whole world explodes into perfection or whatever else. And it's dumb, and it's shallow, and it's temporary, but we all do it at some point or other. And so, like, to see that manifestation of what that actually feels like with that character, it's like, oh, it's just, that's brutal. That's like, that, man. And I like that this doesn't go, this could have been, and Matt, I don't know where you come in on this, so you might, this might be just maybe on the deaf ears type situation, but, like, this could have gone into very bad things territory.
Yeah.
Where all of a sudden everybody becomes a
murderer. I didn't know anything more than, okay, it's, you know, they have a machine to do body swapping and hilarity ensues. That was as far as I knew. So the way things got ratcheted up was different than I expected. I don't know. We haven't spoiled the ending of this. Are we going to on this one, or are we going to tell people to watch it?
Well, they can always pause.
Okay, so just know we're going to talk about spoilery stuff after this. So if this sounds interesting, go watch it. So, like,
there we go.
This movie, Nick, not knowing what was going to happen, you know, something has to go wrong after a body swapping party game type thing. So I assumed we'd get something that we do get shades of, which is just some kind of shitty infighting and maybe trying to sneak a move on somebody while you're in someone else's body or whatever. And I was trying to figure out how that would escalate. And then when you get two people who are actually just having a good time fucking on a balcony and not, like, doing anything, I don't think overtly evil. Wasn't that just too random of the single people?
No, that was Ruben, the guy who's going to get married.
Oh, okay, never mind. I thought and it was Brooke,
who was his old flame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought the other guy had, I was thinking it was the other guy.
Still, but, I wouldn't have thrown him off a balcony.
But right, exactly. But it was like, it wasn't like a nefarious, I'm going to do this to create, you know, like I'm going to steal your body and then try to, you know, disconnect the wire from you so you don't get back in it or something. It wasn't that the move was to change bodies. The issue happens when, oh, two people are dead. Now something has to be done. To yeah. figure out who's gonna, like, you forced everybody to make tough decisions that otherwise you could say, well, you could just knock everyone else out and then get everyone back into their regular bodies, assuming you have everyone to work with. But once you take two people out of the eight,
yeah,
no matter what, it's no one's gonna be happy. Like, you know, you could be more happy if you're in your correct body, but also spend the rest of your life knowing that there's someone in a different body ready to fuck you up if you do something they don't like, and you might end up supporting them their whole life or whatever, you know. But that really cranks up the tension high.
That's the thing, that suggestion. I don't know if you guys did this, but one of the other things my brain did, that when you're in the second act and the third act, my brain, I remember we're watching this now, the second act, third act range, when it starts to really get kind of serious, I had to actually kind of pause it because I was realizing my brain was distracting itself because I kept thinking like Jesus, if you unchecked in this situation, you could have all kinds of situations where, not like Alien Nation or, you know, Mission Impossible with the fake faces, but you could really, like, in terms of, like, you know, the context of a serial killer, the context of all kinds of stuff, like, there's all kinds of things that could get really fucking dark,
yeah,
like, really fast, and it's like, and man, is that interesting? And it's and so it's like, my, and I realize, like, God, I'm not paying attention to what I'm watching, because my brain is just kind of spiraling, you know, outward, and not in gimmicky things. I wasn't thinking of gimmicky things. I was just thinking more of like that capacity of, like, you know, it's the thing, was This American Life, the story from 10,000 years ago, where they ask people, you know, like, would you rather be invisible or fly, and like what that says about your character, or whatever else. And then, like, they did a follow up years later where it's sort of like, well, what if somebody says I couldn't choose between the two of them. What does that say? And like, what does that mean about the person's whatever? And like, the answer to the question ultimately doesn't mean shit, because right. like, just because you pick invisibility doesn't mean that you're dishonest. Just because you pick flying doesn't mean that you're like abused as a child. Like, for Christ's fuck's sake. You start to think about all these different possibilities and all these different kind of different things that can be done. And so that's what this movie kind of like drums up, at least in my brain, was just like, I kept thinking about like, what would somebody's motivations be, or not motivations be, or like, what would they, you know, and if you're one of the two people that just fucking fell off the balcony, the bodies did rather, and then you're like, well,
it creates a
duck goose math problem that's sort of tricky to fix.
Yeah,
I kept going back and forth, like, I almost had to sketch it out to go, well, okay, but they still have the right number of souls and bodies.
Right.
Because they lost two bodies and two souls, but there are two people who just can't go home again. Right. And
right.
Yep.
That's tricky. This is the opposite of the thinking that got us Kid Print. This is somebody going, what if you've got this group of friends and one of them has invented a machine so they can swap bodies, or just like in some way, like they can swap bodies.
You know, okay, what?
And then they go, "Ooh, what should we do with that?" And they think about all the implications and ramifications and things that could happen. And then they give you some pretty harrowing options from that list. But there's layers of thought here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before they even start writing the scripts. Yeah.
This made me think of, once you have the problem of, okay, two of the bodies are destroyed, it reminds me of, they used to have these in like the booths at Perkins when I was a kid, you know, those little triangle shaped pieces of wood with golf tees.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And you have to
hop. Cracker Barrel thing.
This movie is doing that with souls and bodies. Once you take two people out, and I'm sitting there, I think like you described, Josh, where you're kind of diagramming out, like, what's the best possible scenario. And you go, well, if you think the best possible scenario is the people that can go back into their original body, and then the other two people get to like fight over which one they get. Mm-hmm. And again, were everyone to be in the kind of same spot in life, you could make some small argument for that being an equal shake, but one of them's like a filthy hippie that travels around doing drum circles and getting tattoos, and one of them's like a tech bro with like a huge trust fund. And like, so, and even for that, if your life is shitty girl who's got the guy who's been, you know, mentally banging his ex for 8 years he's been with you, maybe you are better off suddenly being an influencer and trying to live up to it and keep that ball rolling for yourself. Like, you do see that a lot of selfish motives come out because, like, you know, these are not just idealized people, but there's also some very realistic, like, survival motives mixed in there to make the whole thing a more interesting soup, we will say.
I think this would reward seeing it twice, to be honest.
Yeah, I want to watch it again, too.
Did you think so, Charlie?
Yeah. Like, actually, I had a ball with this, was it last year? Because they had it at, they premiered it at, I think, Sundance, and then they had it at, Fantastic Fest, or no, at South By. And, yeah, of course it was South By, duh. And it was just like walking out being like, your brain, it's like, all right, brain, calm down. I don't want you to overheat. Because it's just like, but then watching it again, not because it takes some of the punch out, but you more get to kind of pay attention to other stuff. And one of the things, well, many things, and I'm sure you guys would agree that, like, each one of these actors, these young folks, when it called for it, did a really good job of, like, capturing the person. And, but, like, not in a I'm going to be Christian Slater trying to be Jack Nicholson way, but more in, like, a certain mannerism.
Well, but you're pretending to be Christian Slater pretending to be Jack Nicholson.
Yeah. That's the tricky mm-hmm. part, where, like, because then a couple times they do, and I'm not sure who said it, but unless the movie wants you to be confused, because there's a couple of those moments too where you go, wait a minute,
is Ruben's body with Forbes inside it, but Forbes is pretending to be Cyrus.
Yeah,
which was just like. When that happens, which is relatively early on.
Yeah, it's the first switch.
Like that's relatively early on, and I had the thing where I kept thinking, like, oh, this is going to be one of these things where this is going to be like you can't really prove it. Like, it almost becomes like the thing in a way. Like, you're like, okay, yeah, what? We can't prove who's who. But they don't necessarily abandon that concept as much as they just kind of go, well. Like, what's more interesting is what the people are going to do with this sort of power. And then the underlying thing that I didn't even think about the first time around was the fact that this machine is programmable. Like, it doesn't happen at random. It doesn't, like, you just go boop and then you just sort of pop up in 17th century France or something like that. You just, like, it's like you choose what the thing is. Like, it's manual. And it's like, that's wild. Like, that is. And talk about a thing, giving yourself a toy as a filmmaker, giving yourself a toy that you can fuck up five, ten, 15 different ways. Like, there's so many ways to fuck that up. And it's like, and they just super don't.
And all that's dealt with in foreshadowing, because they talk about Forbes being the dork that would always have everybody playing Mafia or Werewolf or games at parties. And so when they introduce it as a party game, you get to tell all of us the rules. And also slip in there, by the way, I will know who's who because I'm the GM. And now you go, oh, someone could know exactly who's going into what. And that pays off in our finale. But it doesn't feel like we're being given technical knowledge every character should have, like every bad sci-fi movie. Like, it just seems natural. Yeah, you quickly explain the rules to a new game when you're in a party. Like, oh, so smart.
Well, then also, too, that unchecked the power of this. Yeah, you know, I think it's like a... it's Back to the Future 2, where, like, you give Biff the guide to all the results, and he's going to become, you know,
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
And so, and it's like, and that's Back to the Future 2, right? But in this situation, like, as an audience member, that is a thought that occurs to you. Like, you could just do all kinds of swapping stuff and do all kinds of things that can occur. And it's like, but ultimately, because it's programmable and it's manual, like, it's very intimate in that way. And so it doesn't become a gimmick, you know, to sort of pursue some kind of criminal enterprise as much as it almost requires you to have to be with friends or be family members or whatever. I could see this also working if you had like, you know, part of the people that were in this group were like friend or family. Or like a brother and sister, or like two, something like that. Like, that would work too, because then you could bring that dynamic into the play. Like, it all requires intimacy, which I think just, like, they made it harder for themselves. But that's really cool.
And then all of this friend group, like a lot of friend groups, are kind of incestuous in that many of them have dated each other over the course of their friendship. And the ones who weren't fucking each other wanted to be. And that makes it doubly weird when you have, like, okay, so this is my current girlfriend, but her soul is this girl who's been pining after me for years.
Yeah.
And she's in my bed.
Well, and that's another thing, like the emotional part of that. Hats off to them again for not becoming so overly, you know, lectury and whatever. But there's some real emotional heft to what some of that stuff means. Like, there's darker things too. Absolutely, the darker things come out in the third act. But there's some legit emotional stuff in there that it's like I still don't know how they pulled off without fucking it up. But like, there's some things in there that, like, what does that feel like to be the not picked one, or to be the second prize or whatever? Like, what does it feel like to be like, have this quote unquote success, but not have any value for anything that you would actually value, like for Nikki's character, like, you know, all those things, like those are legit things. And it's like, and then you bring in this bonkers sci-fi concept to it, and then it's like, oh wow, that's so interesting. And so it never abandons how important it is to have the human part of the Scott story. That's to me one of the biggest takeaways, is like they really treated that with the respect and regard that it needed to have, I thought.
Yeah, very much so. And yeah, now I need to watch it again, just because thinking about those opening scenes with Forbes is never Forbes.
Yeah.
We never see Forbes through the whole thing until he arrives at the very end. Like, that is interesting. And they keep us from even thinking about that by not doing a swapped gender body swap the whole movie.
Oh, you're right.
So we don't even think about the idea that that could be Forbes' sister, or like a woman in a man's body or man in a woman's body.
Which is another point, that the thing that I keep ticking back on in my brain is, once you get that reveal and then you flash back, or at least I do, to the conversation where ostensibly Forbes is talking to the dude who's like, hey man, just wanted to say we're sorry for, you know, all that shit back then. And Forbes is like, what are you talking about? You know, and he's like, you know, the this with that. Oh, right. Oh, he said something too? Yeah, you know, what did he say exactly?
Yeah.
And it seems like Forbes is going, yeah, that was fucked. And like, if you're going to apologize, let's make sure we're getting it all out on the table. And it's like, oh no, sister wouldn't have all the details. She's probing for information, but it's written and shot in such a way that it works for both characters with the same inflection. Mm-hmm. And it's only in knowing the source that you realize it has the separate meaning. And like, that scene in particular stood out to me as like an incredible use of giving us more information later that makes us scene suddenly stand out immensely. It was really
good. Because as it plays at that stage of the thing, it's my supervillain thought, which is like, you don't know if his whole plan is like, I am going to fuck all these people,
right,
and screw up everything because I'm bitter, and like, it, that dialogue could work that way.
It's like making sure that we understand who all is at fault.
And
Perfectly said,
Jojo. That is the guy who ruined this girl's life, talking to
her,
what he thinks is the brother, and apologizing, but not in a way that's like, I'm sorry I strung your sister along for all this time and promised her things and wrecked her entire life. Like, that's not what you're
sorry for. I fucked her that time and she went crazy.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that's nah.
Yeah, and that was yet another thing that they were very sure-footed about, was not making it like, bitter, angry woman is the cause of the, like, no, that's not the thing. Because that would have been an easier, that would have been another one of those things, like, yeah, that would have been easier. But it's sort of like, no, it's more complex than that. And it's like, oh, geez. Like, it's just... Like,
this made me think a little bit of Plus One.
Yes, yeah, thank you.
Oh, thank you. I meant to get to that too. That's now two movies that Netflix has just blown out of the water, out of nowhere.
But I still think of Plus One, and it's been a while since I've seen it, so maybe it's not, as being more of a warmer kind of soft focusy kind of thing.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And this is very spiky, but it's, then again, it's not spiky in that all of these characters are beyond redemption. It's just got this view of humanity that's very jaundiced eye, you know, kind of thing. Because it's not that either. Like, there are moments of tenderness in this that work too.
Yeah.
But it does have more of an edge to it, I think, than Plus One. It's like, it's things get extra real in this movie.
Yeah. This one definitely is going for a definite like, this is a bad news horror situation or horror sci-fi, whatever situation. I thought plus one, if I'm remembering the way I felt about it, like part of the way that they pulled off that weird sci-fi occurrence was that it sort of held a mirror up to each individual person. And that sort of became what their experience was. Because some people seem to have sort of transcendent experiences. Some people had terrible experiences. And like
me and my doppelganger just made out for an hour. What did you guys do?
Like, I killed my immediately. Yeah. And it's like, that was, you know, this one I feel like definitely wants us to feel away. Whereas that one was like, yeah, maybe this is just kind of cool to think about. And that's
maybe
the way
what
it sounds
you bring to it. Like, life is like a sewer. What you get out of it
is what you
depends
put into
on
it.
What you put into it. R.I.P. Tom Lehrer, finally.
The one thing, as much as I really, really dig this movie, and I really love this, the cantaloupe-sized balls that it takes to balance all these things and then have this outcome be so good, the one weak point, I think, is the cops being called and the cops showing up, whatever else, because that's like the one part, I think, it's just, it's very unnecessary. Like it just
gives them a ticking clock, like, is the only thing it does, right?
Yeah, and it's like, it's just kind of like, and that could also be, that could have been an overprotective parent. That could have been it could have been a number of things.
Could have been the bride.
Yeah, and it just was like,
it's like, dude, I miss you. Are you sure I can't come hang out tonight?
Just someone from whatever organization realizing the thing's missing and assuming so-and-so's got it and figuring out where he is.
Yeah, or some connection to the sister or something.
I do kind of agree, though. Like, I didn't enjoy the outside world being inserted into our weird little cocoon because it felt like such a complete universe watching just these people orbiting around each other. So, like, it's a little jarring to have part of the movie take place out of it. But again, that does allow you to kind of tell the full story. So, like, you know, I ain't mad at it for it. But yeah, it's a little weird.
Yeah, I guess that's the one thing. And then, like, but then just in the same, almost the same breath, though, I would also point out, like, how cool it is that they justified the stuff with the house. Like, you know, this, like, big old mansion-y thing, but it's, like, it's decrepitated in parts of the roof and things, and, like, parts of it that have been, like, updated and, like, you know, kind of, like, what a young kind of person's going to do, whatever. And it's, like, I thought that was such a cool thing, too, because, like, you have, like, the dancing room or whatever else, but then you have, like, this, like, you know, this part of the ceiling that just is all fucked up and whatever. And it's like, yeah, that's what happens when you have an 8,000 square foot house and like no common sense. And it's just sort of like, so like that was another thing in and of itself that could have just played super lame and it just didn't. I was like, oh, that's awesome.
I would watch the prequel with Ruben's mom because she filled the giant mansion with like weird art installations, including just stuff based on her own vagina.
Yeah, like, that's true.
That's great. I want to know more. Like, I would subscribe to that publication. Yeah, it is just wild to have something this sure-footed land and just deftly bob and weave around all of the things that could have gone wrong with it and just seemingly take on so many handicaps right at the beginning and then go ahead and blow it out of the water anyway. Like, it was impressive. Back to front. I never once saw where it was going.
Yeah, that's another thing. I'm glad you said that because that's another thing that's important to say with the thing like this is that ultimately it's sort of like I don't think they tip their hat to the degree at which you're like, well, I know how this is gonna go. We just gotta get to that point. It's just sort of like I don't really know, and And I like that because was it who the hell was it? Was it Jeremy Irons or was it I don't remember who it was. I heard this thing recently.
Paul Rubens.
And it was they were talking about how like sometimes with bad writing or like underdeveloped writing, like you have this thing where like, oh, that character wouldn't do this thing or that thing or, you know, whatever it is. And it's sort of like, it's like, yeah, but the thing about it is like people are fallible and they're not consistent. And like sometimes they will overreact or underreact or they'll be, this thing will bother them, that thing won't bother them. And a number of things, like that's how people are constructed. And so like you can't really have 100% of a style book for every human. It doesn't work that way. And it's sort of like, and so in that kind of thing with something like this, if it's done right, you feel like you've got a good sense of these people and you kind of have a sense of what's going on. But ultimately, there's a lot of variables that are hard to pin down. And it's like, yeah, dope. That's well done. Like way to prioritize the right stuff. Like, it's cool.
And also, can we all agree that Forbes is just going to grow up to be Stephen Fry?
Yeah, I think you're probably right there.
Or something like, he's like slowly evolving from Miles Teller to Stephen Fry. That's his journey, I think. It's like the well-known Teller to Fry pipeline.
Yeah, there are worse paths to be set upon.
Right. It could be the Leela to Fry pipeline.
I said that about Rihanna earlier in her career. Nobody listened to me.
Like, listen, you're going to end up being Penn or Teller. Choose wisely.
I choose and.
So yeah, this one is like, I don't want to oversell it. I don't know that it's going to change anybody's life, but I'm still thinking about it, and it's been a week, and I had some really interesting dreams the night that I watched it. So something that can stick in your craw that long, like not by being shocking, but just by being like having giant implications that you can just continue to spin out. And not any huge failures to glom onto and write it off. Like, you have no choice but to go, ooh, yeah, Jesus. Think about that. Like, she's for the rest of her life, she's in Ruben's body. Like, what is that going to be like? And is she going to still be an influencer? Probably. But yeah, so for me, this is like a 9 out of 10. It's sexier than Twister, turns out. Yeah, 9 out of 10. Huh.
I'll say 8.5 out of 10 because it's not as sexy as Together. So as long as we're comparing things to movies that start with T,
I was thinking that the game Twister.
Oh, goddamn!
As a party game, like the body swapping.
Oh well, then because it's not as sexy as.
Who are these people?
The Monopoly. So
the weirdest thing in a mainstream movie in 30 years, going into the barn with all the torture devices, and who are these people? God, Twister. God's sake,
this movie's good. You should see it.
Yeah, I would. I think I'll probably go to 8.5, just because. Yeah, I don't know exactly, but I'd say 8.5 out of 10. And just in general, like, I love it when things come along that have like a lot of confidence, a lot of energy, a lot of creative juice. And maybe not every single decision works, but so many of them work really, really good. And it's like, it just makes me so happy. Like, spontaneous is that thing. Or like, Shaun of the Dead, however many years ago, where they brought in these things, what they were doing. Like, I would always, people don't really go along necessarily, but I would say Grabbers is another one like that. I fucking love Grabbers.
Grabbers is great. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It's just like, if you watch it again, there's certain things with their main lead lady in that one that just sort of like speak to this human condition thing in such a beautifully sincere way. And it's like, it's great. And this boozy, ridiculous thing of like, let's just figure out how to fix this problem. And it just go with it. You know, like there's some things that come across that just like, you can just feel that energy to it. I love that. So yeah, so I'll say 8.5 out of 10. 8.5 out of 10. I mean, anybody who fucks around with record players will know that, like, even though that machine has been developed or whatever else, like, one of those photo plugs is going to have a short in it. Like, it's just going to happen. It's just fucking, you can never escape it. Like, I've got a drawer full of, if I can ever figure out how to rewire them cables. And so when we're plugging one and then we're plugging one and plugging one in, we're like, one of those is going to have a short. Come on now.
It's like, why did you base the machine on a synthesizer?
Like, yeah, that
was... or like it's like a cross between the old telephones, you know, where they're like, please hold, and they plug the phone jack in, and like a Moog. It's like, okay, well, you're gonna get a different body.
That one kid's
you're
dad
gonna get
was
like
in,
a weird sine wave sawtooth kind of flange effect, and
yeah, the kid's dad was in Devo. That's fine.
Was he not man?
Yes. I will switch with Mark Mothersbaugh. That's what I'm gonna do.
I alone shall play the Rugrats soundtrack now. Jesus. Okay, that's good stuff. So we've done what we came here to do, and we're going to talk about 3 things that we're going to do next time, because that's what we do in this place.
It's true.
So next up, we are going to watch 2 new movies based on 90s movies, and then a 3rd movie that's not that, because if you have to try hard enough to shove something into the format, you might as well break the format because we're the ones in charge. And we, you know, we could have added Witchboard, but it sucked. So that's going to probably be one like Nosferatu or Skinamarink that I just can't help but dunk on all the time. Anyway, high tension. So we're going to watch the Hand That Rocks the Cradle. That is new on Hulu, and it must be said that way. And we're going to watch I Know What You Did Last Summer, the new one on Netflix for some reason. And then we're going to watch an Australian movie called Bird Eater or Bird Eater on Amazon Prime. Bird Eater. And I will point out that I have been Joshua this entire accent day, and I will say goodbye.
It's accent day. And I will have a short on the website that you can find. It will be called The Reprisal. This is one that I have not watched yet. It's been in my little bookmark folder of things to possibly do, but I was watching shorts this afternoon before we recorded to try to find one, and I ran out of time before recording started, so we're just going to watch the next one in the queue. So let's all find out together, shall we?
Yay!
And that being said, as far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie down in Austin. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and we'll talk towards you again. Before you even know it. All right, take care. Bye bye.
I watched the first two Nightmares on Elm Street, and I'm just going to run the series.
Nice.
And like, I really think 2 is underappreciated. It's not a very good Nightmare on Elm Street movie, and it may not even be a good movie, but it's fascinating.
Mm. I always love the bit where Freddy erupts out of the dude's body in that one.
Yeah, just like that watching it again, there's weird shit just for no reason. Like, why are Jesse's parents 45 years older than he is?
Yeah.
You know, why does the parrot burst into flames in midair and then nobody really cares? And then at the end, there's like the devil dogs that just have like baby masks on dogs. It, like, what? There's so much weird shit in here because it's just like they didn't have any lore to hang Freddy on, really. They were just like, this one movie, he stalked people in dreams. Well, what else is he going to do? They're like, I don't know, boil a pool? Sure.
Yeah.
Or it's just, it only looks bad in retrospect because they went in a completely different direction after that. Like, just kind of left their asses hanging out.